Welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, my name is Søren Otto, and I am your host today. And since it is Tuesday, it is equities that we're going to talk about, and therefore I am joined by none other than Peter Garnery, our head of equity strats and equity strategies. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, Søren. I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, fine. Thank you. Obviously, it's a bit lonesome here in the studio since you're on a remote connection, but I'm sure we'll get through that anyway. At least we have a very exciting agenda today. First, we're going to look a little bit about on the regional performance. How have the regions performed on equities? Then we're going to talk about the equity market in relation to this geopolitical developments we had over the weekend with Iran attacking Israel. And then, obviously, we're also going to talk about the earnings season, mainly ASML and Netflix, probably or arguably the most important earnings this week. And then we're going to talk a little bit around that. And then let's see if there's anything else that comes up. But Peter, let's start from the beginning. How have the regions performed in recent times, and how is it going on the stock market?
Yeah, we debated before we went online with the podcast recording, Søren, whether we should look at the past week or the month. And we opted in for a little bit longer perspective, so looking at the first 2 weeks of the month. And it stacks up as follows. So the U.S. equity market in local currency, so in dollars, down almost 4%. The European equity market in local currency down 1.1%, Japan down 0.8%, and the emerging markets in dollars, so that can be compared to the U.S. directly, down 1.1%. So there's definitely a clear picture emerging this month that the higher for longer inflation narrative in the U.S. that is increasingly pricing out the possibility maybe even of the outrageous call that there will be no rate cuts in the U.S., is driving a more negative sentiment around U.S. equities. And I think that's because if you look at the sector composition in the U.S., you have a slightly higher duration. But what I mean about that is that you have higher equity valuations in the U.S. because of the sectors that are dominant in that area. Mm. And because of that, you have a little bit more sensitivity to interest rate changes, or at least on the interest rate expectations changes. And then I think, as well, because of the composition, there is the multinational corporations feel have a bigger weight in the U.S. equity market, and because of the geopolitics, I think there is an increasing risk building for at least the U.S. technology sector, which really relies on deep, very long supply chains in the world, and the world is really changing this year on the geopolitics side of things. So that's sort of the landscape. And I think that for now, coming back to our previous podcast we had recently, where we talked about our quarterly outlook for Q2, which is called The Wasted Year, there we actually talked about that we were strategically, we took down US, and we took it down because of technology. We thought the equity valuations were too high, and we actually Europe was the only one we had a positive view on. So far, that seems actually to be playing out pretty well.
But it is obviously interesting development since, I do these monthly recaps every month, looking at how has the past month equity markets performed and also other markets. But I think all of them have been positive throughout the year every time I've looked at it. So it is interesting to see if April is going to turn out to be the first month where we actually end up with negative performance in the regional stock markets.
Absolutely. I mean, we have had 6 months of pretty unusual performance, and I think the global equity market is up more than 25% over the past year. So no matter how you slice and dice the global equity market, the recent performance has been quite extraordinary, actually.
Yeah, and obviously the interest rates that you talk about, the idea that we are considering a lot fewer rate cuts than we anticipated in the beginning of the year, and maybe even none at all. And some extreme people may even argue that we should consider rate hikes. But just a little bit of commercial. The next episode, the thematic episode, is going to feature Altea, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about that there. Another thing that has been affecting the equity markets, at least in the very short term, is probably the geopolitical developments that happened over the weekend, where, as I said, Iran launched this attack on Israel. What's your take on that, Peter, generally from an equity standpoint, and what's been the market reaction? I talked to Ole yesterday who said that in commodities it actually didn't affect the markets too much because it was so priced in and everybody kind of knew that the attack was coming because it's been mailed in very obviously beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think Ole had some great perspective on commodities, and a little bit I think to potentially the layman it was the not so detailed investor, it was probably a little bit of a curious response you had in commodities. The response in equities were also not very dramatic. It sort of came with a little bit of a lag, and I think the lag in equities came as the bond market took the cue from the weekend's events and basically pushed along the same vector those changes on interest rates, right? That we're getting closer to like only one rate cut in the US, and that it is an important variable for how you price equities in financial markets. And then there's also the, as I wrote in my note to clients, there's a very distinct difference between risk and uncertainty. Risk is something you can handle because you have ample of historical data points, so you can quantify risk. That's sort of an uncertainty, as defined by Frank Knight in a great paper, seminal paper from 1921. Sorry, he says there that uncertainty is defined by that it's not quantifiable, and I think that is why geopolitics is such a huge X factor or a critical risk factor for portfolios, because it's so impossible to estimate. And I wrote in that note as well, and I think that is the key takeaway here, that it's a big guessing game because you can't quantify it, and we are not geopolitical experts. But what I took away from it was that the immediate success of the Iron Dome, this multi-layered surface-to-air missile system, defense system that Israel has in place, it had a 99% hit rate. But as I also said, it was pretty clear from the attack and some of the military experts on drone technology that I listened to, that the cost asymmetry is such that we need to come up with new technologies for dealing with these drone swarms, because drones can be produced much cheaper than the defense objects used in these multi-layered air defense systems. So over time, you would deplete your enemy of resources by just swarming and swarming, and you can mass produce these drones to an extent which you can't do with defense missiles. So that is why I wrote the note that so I wrote two things. So the key takeaway is that I said in the morning, would definitely look at what happened in Israel and say, okay, we're going to need to have the same system in Europe. Surely enough, in the evening, a joint statement by Poland, UK, Germany, and Denmark said that Europe needs its own Iron Dome system. So demand will surely go hugely up for air defense systems. And we have the US-based Patriot system by RTX, which is the former Raytheon Corporation. I am betting that I think the Norwegian defense contractor, Kongsberg, I think is potentially in a better position in Europe, because we have clearly chosen a European first policy on military spending, and that they have the NASAMS system, which I think will probably be favored for Europe's defense system. And then I talked very briefly, and this is about the future. I think it's very exciting, son, that the UK Ministry of Defense have had some really successful trials with a system called the Dragonfire, which is a laser system where you shoot a laser and you take out a flying object in air. And they have actually this year have some successful trials with this new technology, and it's very cheap. So you can fire a laser to take out a flying object coming towards a ship. You can take that by shooting a laser into the air for 10 seconds, and it costs you around £10. So that's even cheaper than the drone. So I think we can imagine a future where we would have laser defense systems against these drone swarms.
And that sounds very sci-fi to me, but as you say, one part is that in terms of opportunities within the equity market, obviously this sort of lends itself to the defense industry. However it's going to play out and who's going to come out victorious in that realm, we don't know. And obviously you also have to consider whether it's something you want to invest in. But that's sort of a pocket of equities that could end up being interesting. And you've also said that multiple times. The other thing that you said, just to try and recap what you said, is that equities probably reacted more to the interest rate than to what happened over the weekend. Also, as we stated, because it was pretty well announced by Iran that they would do this attack. So is that more or less summing up what your take on the equity markets related to the event was?
Absolutely. And I forgot to say that the market leader in these laser systems that are used for military applications is actually Leonardo, the Italian defense company. They have, according to the data points I got yesterday, 60% market share. So that's pretty interesting. And as coming back to the angle you had, some people wants to avoid military stocks. I can certainly sympathize with that viewpoint. So if you want something that is a little bit more light but still very important for military application and defense of nations, you can go and look for cybersecurity companies. I will make the case though that I think defense stocks in the years to come will be a great addition, both in terms of return enhancement but also risk reduction in your portfolio to geopolitical events. But yeah, absolutely. Here in the short term, it's the interest rates that that have been driving equities lower, but it's intertwined or interlinked with the developments that we're seeing geopolitically. And I think also the US equity market today and futures markets generally globally are responding with a little bit of nervousness to the official statement that came overnight that Israel will retaliate against Iran for what they did. Despite G7 countries are urging restraint from Israel's side, so I think we're looking into some pretty potential volatile and hectic weeks. But let's hope for the best, son. I think eventually a lot of good things do turn out in world history. So let's hope it doesn't escalate to crazy things.
Let's hope for the best for everybody, indeed. And I guess we can also say the same when we look at the earnings season, because we have the earnings season started more or less last week with the financial sector in the US, and that didn't perform too well, to be honest. This week we have a few very interesting companies coming out, and one of them being the European ASML semiconductor company, or semiconductor producing machine company, I guess is more correctly phrased. What's your take on ASML? They are reporting tomorrow, and what's the expectations around that company?
Yeah, so the expectations are actually not very good, and you might be wondering why is that? But it's because there's a lot of lags in their business. It's an order producing business. So actually, if you look at the Bloomberg estimates, which I'm looking at right now, I mean the revenue is expected to be down 19%. For the first quarter, wow, compared to a very strong strong quarter 1 year ago. So the quarter they had a year ago, first quarter, they had a 91% revenue growth. So obviously the base effect, which is meaning that if you had a very strong quarter a year ago, it can be very difficult to sustain the very high growth rates. So but actually, and if you look at the estimates for the whole year, CERN, I mean, ASML has said it themselves, that 2024 is going to be like a transition year before the next growth wave will hit the company. So the revenue expectation for 2024 is 28.2 billion euros. So that's only an increase of 2.4%. A little bit of a hit is expected on the operating profit side of things. But then in 2025, analysts have a 29% revenue growth rate baked into the estimates, with a significant 50% jump in the operating income. So a lot of growth ahead for ASML. I think that if you read tomorrow headlines with revenue be down, revenue is down, etc., don't take it for bad things. It's just that there's a lot about timing on orders and bookings of revenue for ASML, and the long-term future still looks extremely rosy for this company that produces what Bloomberg and FT yesterday called the most pricey and most sought machines in the entire world. The US and China cannot deliver on their AI ambitions and their computer chips ambitions without this technology for Europe. So we always talk, son, about US having this leadership in technology, but none of it could actually be possible without without the extreme ultraviolet lithography machines from ASML. So Europe is actually in a pretty good position on that technology.
Yeah, and it is this interesting case and very rare in these days that we have a company that actually have monopoly within a very specific industry and are the only ones able to produce this machinery. Peter, I also think that just a point here is that as we've also said several times, this is very obviously a case where the absolute numbers aren't as important as the expectations and the estimates, as we've said numerous times when it comes to earnings seasons and how the markets will react.
Exactly, and that will be the same case for ASML. I would say that the CapEx trends in the global technology sector is looking better and better, and I think that the outlook from ASML will look pretty strong. I mean, there's nothing to suggest from the price action and the information we have on Nvidia or other chip makers that anything that things are slowing down. So and one of the reasons why you have this temporarily softness in demand is also because a lot of ASML, there's a cycle shift to 3 nanometer nanometers machines, and these 3 nanometer technologies requires these extreme ultraviolet machines, and you know they are ramping up the production of that, and there's a lot of orders coming. So as soon as we get on the other side of this Q1 result, we will begin to see ASML improving their revenue and their profits again.
Another interesting company, as I also think I teased in the beginning, is Netflix, that's reporting this week. At least last quarter, they had a pretty solid, as I recall, earnings, and they have been spearheading this idea that streaming services are starting to clamp down on people sharing their accounts, which seem to have had a positive effect. But what's the expectations now, and what's your take on Netflix as a streaming / technology company and their upcoming report?
Well, I expect the good vibe to continue for Netflix. I think they look like they're in a pretty good position on content, and a lot of the 3 profitability initiatives that they rolled out add tiers. They hiked the prices on some of their subscriptions. They also clamped down, as you said, on sharing of passwords, and that has dramatically improved their revenue and their profitability. So if you look at the fourth quarter 2023, as you mentioned, revenue growth came in at 12.5% year on year. That same quarter a year before, so the fourth quarter of 2022, the growth rate was only 2%. So there was a dramatic improvement in revenue growth. And if you look at the first quarter here, analysts expect the growth rate to continue in the same neighborhood, 13.5% revenue growth expected. And the street has an estimate on earnings per share of $4.50, which is almost a 60% increase from a year ago. So you can actually say there are very high expectations, and the question is whether they can deliver on that. But I think that the things that they have rolled out commercially, I think will have some longevity and will continue to add to the business metrics here. So I go into this earnings release with a pretty good expectation that they can actually deliver.
So will either of these 2 companies be the stock that you're paying most attention to this week, or are there any other companies that you think are worth highlighting?
It is the main 2. You could argue that the Procter & Gamble reporting on Friday could have a little bit of a relevance if you just generally, I mean, personally, I think it's a boring company. Boring companies can sometimes be a very profitable endeavor for shareholders. So I won't talk down Procter & Gamble from a shareholder or stock perspective, but I think as a company as a whole, I think the fast-moving consumer goods had their heydays where they were the darlings of the market, but that was back in the 1990s and the early 2000s before the great financial crisis. And I think ever since there's been a dramatic shift away from fast moving consumer goods being very interesting. So I think they live their lives in the shadows of the technology sector and then in the media business streaming we just talked about with Netflix. But Procter & Gamble can be interesting from a macro perspective just to get a little bit of validation about what is the health of the consumer. But again, we're getting so many data points on the consumer all the time that, again, it's not like we're going to be super surprised about anything from the Procter & Gamble results.
No, I was about to say that you say in this macro perspective, it could be interesting. And I guess that's kind of related to inflation, that it can almost be like a proxy for inflation of whether the sales numbers are still doing as they should, or that people can afford to buy whatever it is that they are now selling.
Exactly.
All right, Peter, then I think we have one question left. Obviously, the million-dollar question, which is, in the near future, we have this. We have these two things. We have geopolitical tensions, and then we have the earnings season, which is kicking into gear. What do you expect will be driving equity markets the most? Is it one of those two, or is it really interest rates that's going to be the main focal point?
I think it's it will. The political answer is, so the hedged answer is, of course, that. It will be a mix of a lot of the things. I think the geopolitical risk is the most difficult one to predict how it will impact the market. I would just say that it's an unknown risk in terms of how much it can impact your portfolio in a negative way. I think the earnings season, as we've talked about in recent podcasts, I think will be good. So that will, I think, the outlook from companies will add to the picture that the economy is doing great. And then inflation will stay higher for longer, and that in turn will drive this higher for longer narrative across the futures markets that are pricing the Fed policy. And I don't know how big a problem will be for equities. I mean, it's like rising interest rates are not necessarily a super bad thing for equities, because it often shows that growth is robust. And that's a positive for compounding of future cash flows. So that's actually a positive for equity markets. But there's a magical point where if the rising interest rates is because you have rising inflation beyond a certain point, and I think that point is that if you have sustained inflationary levels above 4%, then over time it will be negative eventually for equities. But that's that discussion, and I have an analysis maybe we can talk about one day on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Equity returns in different inflation regimes, but it's a little bit of a longer discussion, Søren. So maybe we should wait for that. But it's a great conversation to have. But maybe we should wait for after the earnings season.
Yeah, I think that sounds like very interesting. I also like this idea about different types of uncertainty, that you have these quantifiable uncertainties and these other uncertainties that are very difficult to guess how will impact the financial markets. Because if there's something finance people like to do, it is to quantify stuff so they can calculate the ability for it to have an impact or not. But Peter,
exactly.
Thank you so much for coming and making us all a little bit smarter today. It's always a pleasure having you in the studio, even though you aren't physically with me here today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. And I'll see you in the studio next time. I'm sure of that.
Definitely. And to you out there, I have no more to say than on behalf of Peter Garnery, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo. My name is Søren Otto. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back anytime soon. But until then, happy trading.